Welcome to Clarity Fund Podcast, Episode 2. I'm Dr. Owen Anderson, and I'm the Research Director here at Clarity Fund, and I'm joined by Greg Goodrich, who is one of our research fellows. Hi, Greg.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Well, yeah, it's a good day. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I especially enjoy talking with you about what we do at Clarity Fund, and I think what we do is philosophical, and people will notice that. And that raises a question people ask me sometimes: how did you get into philosophy? And sometimes it's kind of a consolation question, like, I'm so sorry for you. How did you get into philosophy? Because it seems odd, maybe. How did these kinds of questions interest you? And when we start to get philosophical, sometimes philosophy has jargon, like any profession, right? Any profession has jargon. What we're doing at Clarity Fund, I think, although we do have terms we use, I think it's somewhat jargon-free in the sense that the terms we're using, what we're talking about, like knowing God, reason, moral law, you can pretty quickly get. But we're asking questions like, how do we know God exists? And what is our highest good? And for some people, they might say, look, I already know the answers to those, and now I'm going on and doing the important parts of life. So why do you guys get stuck on those,
which
seem to be in the beginning? Where did it all go wrong for you?
Well, I think like most people are going to figure out what how to direct their life, you know, during their teenage years, and I think that's where I went wrong.
So, really? How so?
Well, circumstantially, just maybe some to do with personality. You know, questions arise, I think, that are there for everyone. Why live? Why exist? What's the purpose of life? And can I even know what the purpose of life is? We have different supposed authorities vying for our attention. So we're going, you know, transitioning from middle school to high school. Maybe we're growing up in a Christian home, maybe we're not. We have pastors or youth pastors, many different people that claim to be authorities, I guess, you know, just in virtue of their being adults that are saying, hey, you know, this is what you should do with your life. This is how you should think about life.
But also, what happens, mentioning the adults, what happens usually in those that time period is you're doing identity formation. So you're also distancing yourself from some of the adults who are in your life as you begin to form your own identity. Whereas in middle school, you're still more sort of memorizing what you're being told and identifying with your family group or religious group. So developmentally, those high school years, young adulthood, late teen, early adulthood, those high school years are usually when a lot of these questions do come up for people. I know that's what they did for me as well. And especially the struggling with meaninglessness and purpose of life. What is the purpose of life? It seemed to me during those years that much of what people did didn't have a lot of purpose. And I couldn't make sense of how does life come to have purpose. And I wrestled with that, especially that sense of meaninglessness and lack of purpose, lack of significance, lack of meaning.
Maybe we were just losers, though. We were.
That's what I'm getting at, though, is someone could say, look, this is almost a kind of obsessive compulsive disorder. Like some people have to lock a door 50 times before they're comfortable. You guys got stuck on questions that everyone else knows the answer to. And you just kind of keep repeating these same questions. And so the philosophers could be viewed that way, right? As kind of odd for that reason. You got stuck on basic questions about the meaning of life. Everyone else knew the answer and was able to move on and be successful. Somehow you eked out a living doing philosophy, but it still seems different. And I'm wondering, what I'm getting at with it is this, that the questions we're asking in philosophy, and that word itself is ambiguous. So for example, sometimes philosopher means unbeliever, like in contrast to theologian. So here I think we're not using it that way. We're using it more as the love of wisdom, what the word actually means. And we're looking at that in terms of the meaning of life. If you love wisdom, you'd be concerned about knowing basic things.
And so the teenage years would be a very appropriate time to figure out what wisdom is. Sort of a fork in the road, many forks in the road, and we need to know what's the goal and how do we get there. So in some sense, it's kind of, I'm trying to make a defense that we weren't losers.
Yeah.
But
on the face of it is we're losers.
Yeah.
But the reality is we're not.
Right. But that's what a loser would do, right? Is argue that they're not a loser.
So. Yeah. Well, and just be argumentative. Sometimes philosophers are just argumentative people.
Yeah.
And that's what they like to do. And you encounter such and you want to avoid them at all costs. But I think in our case, we can actually say it was the opposite. We wanted to come to have knowledge where arguments end.
Yeah.
Because you know things.
Right.
And what I was struck by, what especially struck me was not only that I didn't know the purpose of life, and I wanted life to have some purpose, but also that the people around me had different answers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was aware as I got into high school that there was my family and religious background, but I knew other people from different families and different religious backgrounds who were equally confident of their beliefs.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what bugged me.
And it wasn't just one group that was nice.
Yeah.
Everybody can be nice.
Yeah, there was, yeah. So, and I could maybe even admit that other groups were nicer.
Yeah.
In one sense, right? And so if you're trying for niceness instead of truth, I might lose.
Yeah, right.
But what bugged me was I didn't know, and I was equivalent in the sense of I think I know. I was equivalent to others who think they know, and maybe none of us know. And so that was kind of the beginning of doing philosophy. And I think that's related to what Socrates said, that the unexamined life is not worth living.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point at which I began to examine my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized I don't know things. Did that happen with you?
Yeah, it did. But I can't help this coming to mind that maybe it's a generational difference, but a lot of my students right now are struggling with this idea of maybe they're going through, you know, their teenage years or early 20s, and they're struggling with this question of, well, this is my truth and that's your truth. And I don't know that that was as prevalent when you and I were maybe going through our teenage years.
It might be the phrasing, but I remember that same idea. And it's partly connected up to...
Coexist, maybe?
Yeah, and partly connected up to we don't need to look into these things.
Okay.
They don't really matter.
Yeah.
Like, if it mattered, then we would want to debate it.
Yeah.
But it's your truth and my truth, and we get through the day. It's somewhat like pizza toppings. Now, you don't go into a pizza restaurant and argue with the people in line about what the best toppings are. You get your pizza, they get their pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's happy. Or Baskin and Robbins, right? Everyone gets whatever flavor of ice cream they want.
Yeah.
That's why they invented Baskin and Robbins, right? Is to have different flavors.
Right.
And so truth could be viewed that way, right? Well, you do your thing on your religious days, and I do my thing on my religious days, and it doesn't really affect us.
Yeah. So how do we avoid the charge of being proud if we actually think that we've come to find answers? Maybe Socrates was just a really proud guy, and he was causing trouble for everyone, asking them questions all the time.
That's a great question.
Maybe many people think philosophy, well, they just endlessly debate. They're never actually coming to certainty.
Yeah.
It's like what is it? Pursuing knowledge. It's
ever
escaping
learning,
me right
but
now.
Never
ever learning, but never
to
coming to knowledge of the truth. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, I think good. Let's look at a couple of those things, because you brought up Socrates again. Socrates is known for saying he doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
He's in a better position than others that he found, because others that he talked to thought they knew, but when he questioned them, it came out they didn't know. Whereas he realizes he doesn't know, and that's superior to thinking you know. That's pride. Pride is when you think you know and you don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so someone could hold Socrates up as a kind of humility, and they take him as an example. I take him as an example in one way, but you could take him as an example in another way, which is the outcome of philosophy is never knowing anything.
Right, yeah.
And later skeptics did look back to that. Academic skeptics did look back to that and say that's the pinnacle of the academy and philosophy, is that no one knows anything. And if you think you know something, you're proud.
Mm-hmm.
And someone can come along and do Socratic inquiry on you.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would say the essence of Socrates is going around questioning people to show no one knows anything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't take Socrates historically or as an example to get us there.
I agree.
He didn't want to just be in that place. He wanted to know things.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to just get to a place where he knows nothing. So his desire was to know things, which means he thought knowledge was possible.
Yeah.
He didn't deny that point. But he also wanted to avoid the pride or the fool, put those in the same category as someone who thinks they know when they don't know, and they go around boasting, and the way it comes out is through that Socratic process of questioning.
Mm-hmm.
So through dialogue, we can begin to test assumptions or presuppositions and see if we know or we only think we know. And I think that was one of the things that struck me in those formative years. Developmentally, it strikes everyone about that same time.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know, other people think they know, none of us really knows, is knowledge possible? And if it isn't, then there's no meaning in life.
Mm-hmm.
And that really got me. Yeah. For a number of those years in high school, I was struggling with that.
It seems that as I reflect back on those years, reading the Proverbs of Solomon was something that may not have been intentionally a spiritual practice at that point, but I was trying to understand and relate to what was being said of wisdom, and to say that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. I think that is going to play into a lot of the motive for this podcast, is trying to think about what is it to fear the Lord. And so if I think about my life in those formative years, I see there was a search for meaning. There were competing narratives. I didn't give up on the idea of there is truth. There is a reality. If I don't know that reality, I don't know my way through it, I might get punched in the face, right? Whether or not I want it to be that way, it's going to be that way. But then to find that it is God who has set up reality in this way to reveal himself, as I came to understand that more and more through clarity, that I can know basic things, and I can know God exists, I can know that he's created me as a human, there is a moral law that governs myself, human culture, and the degree to which we recognize that, affirm it, acknowledge, give thanks to him or not is going to be the determining factor for how much fruit is born and where human culture goes.
Yeah, so, that's a really good connection of our main topics.
Yeah.
In your own case. And mine was similar in...
Not that I figured all of that out within a matter of days.
But. Yeah, this is like our mature self reflecting back on that high school self and some of the terms... I'm trying to phrase things in the way I would have phrased them.
Yeah.
But sometimes we might use terms that we use now, but might not have used then. But I was very well...
I have difficulty with not doing that. So.
But I was very well aware of purposelessness and lack of significance. What's the meaning of my life?
Yeah.
Not necessarily human existence, but in what way do I make any kind of contribution? Do I need to be here?
Mm-hmm.
And is there any real purpose to that? Or is it all vanity?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a word I might not have applied then, but I see I was wrestling with that problem. If all of life is vanity,
mm-hmm.
then what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, when I first heard about this idea of the good, what is the good? I hadn't come across that concept before. And so it was put to me very directly in my very first philosophy class, going around asking all of the students in the class, what is good? And none of us knew, but I saw that's the concept that would give life meaning and purpose. And I don't know what it is. I should know what it is. And so there was a conviction there. I should know what it is. None of us do. We're all young adults, so we're old enough to know it. And that's what, if I knew that, that would make sense of life.
Mm-hmm.
The good, the highest good. What is that thing? The chief end of man or eternal life. Use those three concepts, good, chief end of man, eternal life, as philosophy concept, theology concept, biblical concept. And so I wrestled with that question. And I think the purpose of the Clarity Fund summarizes that when we say our goal, our chief end, the good, is to know God.
Mm-hmm.
So that God is knowable. It's not merely a matter of opinion. And I can and should know him. And there's also built into that, it's not merely developmental, formative, but also conviction.
Right, yeah.
I should have known this.
Yep.
And although I might have been raised in some sense saying I know God,
mm-hmm.
and in one way I never doubted that,
mm-hmm.
in the sense of identifying as an atheist,
mm-hmm.
there's another more important sense in which had you asked me questions about God, I couldn't have given much of an answer, right. let alone any kind of a proof to distinguish God from non-gods.
Mm-hmm.
And so my profession of belief wasn't much, and it should have been a lot more.
Yeah.
And so what that evidenced for me was I wasn't seeking as I thought I was seeking.
Yeah.
Because that's a word I was learning comes up for some in connection to philosophy is pretension.
Mm-hmm.
And philosophers might seem pretentious and kind of full of themselves.
Yeah.
Like they go around, they're full of angst and they go around. They're too good to get involved in normal human activities because they're the ones thinking deep thoughts. Mm-hmm. And that does feed into people's self-life. It makes them proud.
Yeah. Especially when they get tenure.
Yeah, right. When you get into positions, you begin to get rewarded for that. Yeah. And you think of yourself as the expert on some topic.
Yeah.
It could fuel into that. But I think just that general personality type could be a real one that has to reckon with itself and says, yeah, I tend to find my purpose or my significance by distancing myself from the masses. Mm-hmm. And I'm deep and they're not.
Yeah.
But that person is still lost in skepticism and doesn't know what they should know.
Right.
Isn't seeking as they should. So there's that form of philosophy which claims to know, claims to be deep. It isn't actually deep. Mm-hmm. It's the appearance of deep. And you mentioned those before, always learning.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think what you did was a very important corrective to just Socrates and the love of wisdom is bringing in the fear of the Lord. Mm-hmm. And we don't see that evidenced in Socrates. I think Socrates could have known much more than he did, and he should have known much more than he did about God.
Yeah.
And the Socratic method, if we follow that example, leads to that there, yeah. Even though he didn't do it.
Yeah, so not only could we say he didn't know, but it was a positive, in a way it was a positive, expression or display of where his heart was at. Mm-hmm. It was an expression of the human heart that he didn't know what he should have.
Yeah.
So it's not just, oh, he didn't make it as far as he could have, but he fell entirely short of what it is to be a human.
Yeah, so if it's true, as we're told in Romans 3, 10, 11, that none seek, none understand, and none do what is right, then that's mm-hmm. true of Socrates.
Yeah.
And for all the other ways he's an example, he also didn't seek,
right,
didn't understand, and didn't do what is right. Mm-hmm. And so the fear of the Lord, I mean, to me, I'm especially connecting up the fear of the Lord with the wages of sin is death. That there's a connection, a necessary connection between those. Mm-hmm. And that death there, especially in terms of spiritual deaths, the meaninglessness that comes from a darkened mind.
Yeah.
When you're left to your foolish mind. And that sin leads there, and that's very fearful.
Yeah.
And seeing that in your own condition and repenting of it is a turning from that darkened mind to light. And I want to cash that out because light and dark are used in so many standard
You just got to have typology. A balance. Just have a balance.
Yeah, have some balance. Okay. Or just that they generally refer to good and evil or knowledge and ignorance. Mm. But specifically, the logos as the light, or the logos as the life, which is the light of man, mm-hmm. the light of our mind, that by which we know God. The logos makes God known. Mm-hmm. And so being restored to knowing what you should know about God was always there. You should have known it, didn't know it. You weren't seeking. So connecting up both Romans 3 and also John chapter 1 to emphasize now, as I look back on my high school years, even though this is something I wouldn't have been able to articulate then, but I was struggling with that spiritual death of meaninglessness.
Right.
And when I heard that we can specifically know our highest good, I was able to make that connection. That's where meaning would be. Mm-hmm. And our highest good is connected to knowing God.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good. So we can look at maybe the history of philosophy as sort of an enterprise where we really are given an opportunity to focus on what we can know at the basic level, sort of the presuppositions. We talked about that, I think, in the last podcast. So we can give a lot of attention to that. And what we've found in human history is really the fear of the Lord is not there.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think philosophers, as I said, the word philosophy is ambiguous. So one way we're defining it is as a love of wisdom. Mm-hmm. Another way philosophy could be a kind of application, which is the examined life, self-examination. Mm-hmm. And so, that self-examination leads to what you're suggesting. It should lead to the fear of the Lord.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes people say, well, look, that's where faith comes in. So faith and philosophy are intention. I know last time we talked about in the first episode, we talked about faith, and you mm-hmm. defined faith as a...
Switch there a little bit.
Yeah, you switched the two words, but the idea, you're getting at the right idea from Hebrews, that faith is the substance.
Substance of things hoped for.
And evidence of things not seen. So right. Faith is not contrasted with understanding.
Yeah.
So someone could say faith and philosophy are intention, or that faith is the philosophy is the natural man, mm-hmm. and faith is the scriptural man,
mm-hmm.
as if there's some tension there. And for what we're doing, we're studying philosophy as looking at basic beliefs, which really straddle natural and revealed, or gender revelation and special revelation,
mm-hmm.
because basic beliefs are addressed in both.
Yeah.
They're about God. So think about Paul in Acts 17, and he talks to the Greek philosophers. Mm-hmm. So right there is already qualified, not philosophers simpliciter, but Greek philosophers.
Yeah.
And especially then they were locked in a deadlock between the Stoics and the Epicureans,
mm-hmm.
both of whom are a kind of materialist, especially the Epicureans, who say there is no God and there is no soul. There's only atoms in the void.
Mm-hmm.
And so given that a starting point, they're debating with each other, what's the point of life? What's a good life? And what Paul does is he presents things in a way that calls out their assumptions,
mm-hmm.
especially that it's in God we live, move, and have our being. And that's part of what we're doing at Clarity Fund as well. We're looking at the assumptions behind worldviews like that. So we're using Paul as the model Christian philosopher. He doesn't quote a Bible verse at the Epicureans.
Right.
But he brings up their assumptions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is in one way gender revelation.
Yeah.
And he questions them. And especially for Epicurus, when Paul gets to the resurrection of the dead is when they object. Mm-hmm. Some object.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole point of the Epicurean system was when you're dead, you're dead. So do whatever's pleasurable to you now. There's no consequences.
Yeah.
If there's a resurrection, this raises some problems for that system, which then brings them back to look at their assumptions about only atoms and the void exist, in contrast to it's in God that we live, move, and have our being.
Yeah, good.
I think there's that sense of what us doing philosophy, and in that way philosophy and faith overlap.
Yeah, so you mentioned jargon earlier, but metaphysics is a study of what is real or what is eternal. There with the Stoics and Epicureans, you can see how if it's materialism, it is going to inevitably funneled down into a very specific ethical view, right? So maybe there's some inconsistency and they believe in good and evil, but metaphysics is something that Christians should take interest in discussing, because, maybe we're warned from Scripture, some think, that we shouldn't get involved in philosophy.
Yeah, but avoid philosophy simpliciter versus avoid worldly philosophy.
Or vain philosophy, yeah. which gets back to this idea of vanity. And if we look at Adam and the way that he responds post, fall, as God is calling him back, we see him responding in self-deception, thinking that, he's okay. He doesn't affirm or repent of the belief of the lie that he had. He covers himself with something that's insufficient, and he might try to cover the covering and then try to cover that covering, and he can't ever get back to that initial shameless state. So self-deception is there, self-justification. And so vain philosophy might often be consumed with that, right? I'm in self-deception. I'm justifying myself, speaking of how others don't know, but I do.
Yeah.
And so how is it that Clarity Fund, you think, is cutting through this? How is it that we're coming to knowledge where others have not? And I don't think that we should say others have not in the past, but within the Christian worldview, we are saying that sin has a consequence that's already there present in spiritual death, and that we're coming to life through the work of Christ. So that, in one sense, is very condemning. You're not worthy to be in communion with God unless you have Christ. And so that does have a very hard-hitting message to those that are doing philosophy and thinking that, what are you saying to me? Teaching at an Ivy League university, writing books, and I know stuff.
Right, so. Yeah. So it brings up the Christian message of redemption through Christ alone and not through doing philosophy. You can't redeem yourself by doing philosophy. I used reason as best I could, so I redeemed myself.
Yeah.
You're only redeemed through Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so philosophy and gender revelation are not, they are sometimes set in contrast to that, because someone could say, look, I know a bunch of things. I'm very smart. I know all about the latest events,
mm-hmm.
All the greatest thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing here this goes back to our question at the very beginning of this episode about pride, is the claim that we can know things prideful,
mm-hmm.
the claim that we can know God prideful.
Yeah.
And we're really beginning with foundational things, basic things that are expressed in historic Christianity, that the chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. So if that's prideful, it seems to be the opposite of vain. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure you could call that vain,
mm-hmm.
but it is a claim to know. And so those who don't believe we can have knowledge will say it's prideful, and it will appear foolishness to the
yeah.
world.
Yeah.
But
we so the natural mind may think that it's, you know, I may think that I'm seeking when I'm not.
Yeah.
And so we as Christians have to give an account for that.
Yeah, yeah, that. And how do I know if I really am seeking? So that's a good topic for a future podcast.
Good.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.